Hey, here we are.
Has
Spiritual,
it
not religious. Josh and Tracy once
Josh
again.
Josh and Tracy. And Josh has a normal volume of a voice. I have a weirdly, he's just gargled. That seems. He's really, you know, one thing about Josh is he's really loosened up on these podcasts. And I like that. Because at first he was being very, like, Walter Cronkite about it.
Well, you know, being loose is part of the natural expression of our embodiment. Without looseness, we become rigid and without expression, and thus cannot connect to each other aside from stationary adjacency.
You know who I always thought was hot on Star Trek Next Generation?
Who?
Data.
Data! Didn't though he once have a malfunction that gave him a boner that wouldn't go away?
Okay, explicit content now already. Already going to explicit content on our
Does your setting not have that set up?
I don't have it as explicit. Like, I always put it as kind of PG because up to now it has been. But you've been scooching us into some arenas that are more
explicit.
I wouldn't call them explicit.
Educational?
Yes.
Because prior to my presence, this was a far more of an entertainment podcast, wasn't it?
Oh, I am both flattered and insulted.
I was wondering how you'd react to that.
Both.
Both.
That's classic me, though. Like, I'm always both by insulted and complimented by the same content. Hmm.
Maybe this could be the analysis of strengths overused, underused.
Ah, the whole concept of strengths and overused strengths.
Yes.
Ah, so, okay, I like that, and that fits into, so, okay, all right, Josh.
It could grow as basic as the volume of voice, couldn't it?
Yeah, but see, I appreciate you doing that, so other people can hear that I'm not the only loud person ever, but he's doing it ironically.
Well, just before this podcast, which we're recording on earbuds, perhaps, for you listeners out there wanting to know, why does this sound different? That's why.
Or, yeah. But they're not. Because if anyone actually has listened to more than one of my podcasts, that means that their tolerance for kind of sketchy audio is really high. And I'd just like to say thank you to anyone who's ever listened to more than one of my podcasts. Mm-hmm. Because you knew what you were getting into. I mean, if you listen to one of my podcasts, you know the audio is crap. But if you listen to, like, you don't know when you start.
I've listened to almost all of them, or at least five.
Dude, that's not even close to all of them.
How many are there?
Like, 20 or something. 20 lots. Dude, see, the fact that you think there's only five, or do you just mean that you've only listened to the ones where you're a guest?
Maybe they're
where you're a co-host.
They're so impactful that a small number feels like an extravagant, broad, all-encompassing info dump.
Yeah, info dump. That's the name of my podcast. Info dump. Right now, this is evidence. I'm watching Josh right now, and if he gargles again, that's on him. Okay, no, he's not gargling again. Okay, so no, we decided to try this new thing because remember any of you who've listened to my Go for a Walk podcast, Want to Go for a Walk podcast, which was kind of fun until you couldn't hear what I was saying because of all the cars. But
the part where you found the pen, though, that touched my heart.
Did it?
Yeah.
I believe you. I think you're unironic. Mm-hmm. Tell me why finding the little pink gel pen touched your heart, Josh.
Multiple reasons. I use a pen at work every day. Inside joke that is now outside.
Yeah.
Along with pens were a Christmas present for me this year from my housemate, and it was a request, so there was that.
Oh.
And for good pens, I used to take them / steal them from my mother, so pens are connected to a maternal thing for me.
Mm.
And I'm very fond of found objects that are there, that are kind of enticing, and you go through this little drama of, but where does it come from? Who wants it? And the other thing is that you and I have had discussions about thievery and its karmic impact versus its innocent thrill in relation to flower picking.
Mm-hmm. Josh, would you like me to out you about this flower picking situation?
Let's do it.
Okay. Okay. Josh has a cute thing. He feels that it is cute. He feels it is cute and a sort of a nostalgia and a carrying from his, like a carrying forward into his adulthood, an aspect of his childhood.
Yes.
So it has all this meaning for him that is very sweet. What he does is he steals flowers from other people's yards. He has I'm not sure how true his whole, he says, he has a rather stylized ethic about it, which is that he only does ones that he perceives as being outside the borders of the cared for garden, or if it is a neglected garden in some way, so he can believe that he isn't somehow rescuing these flowers.
Rescuing and sharing them and appreciating them where they might normally be unappreciated, off in the corner of the yard in a shady spot among an additional abundance of other flowers.
But I think that's a little speciesist to imagine that flowers want human attention.
How did they get planted in the first place?
Well, there's a whole other argument about the idea of co-creating with nature and gardens.
Well, I've been outed.
Yes, okay. But anyway, but that being said, so he's outed now. And he was telling me about this phenomenon, this practice of his, and although he finds it very sweet, and I want to, you know, be respectful of his sense of sweetness, I told him he better not bring me any dang stolen flowers.
Last night, I purchased flowers and brought them to you.
I know. A dozen.
Or did buy them, or did I shoplift them?
Oh, let's freaking hope you didn't shoplift. That's like a whole nother level of not okay. Would you like to be pretty solid about you did not shoplift them, or is there any question? Do I need to revise my whole understanding of you?
Well, I did not shoplift them. However, I think the cashier made a mistake and only charged me for the roses and not the miscellaneous groceries I purchased with the roses. So in a way, I did steal some other things.
But you didn't know that you stole it. And it was well after you had left. You came home and you said, "Oh,
yeah,
what?" And then when you said, "I think my credit card was charged wrong," and I was like, "What happened?" And I was afraid it was overcharged, which means he would have already figured out I've been stealing his credit cards and making a lot of purchases on
when
them.
When
I'm really not
steal
doing
those
that.
Flowers, though, I do it in such a way that the people don't know that I've stole them.
So in that way, you're analogizing it to the grocery store.
Yes.
Well, in that particular case, in the case of possibly having benefited from someone else's mistake.
Mistake?
I mean, at the grocery store, the lady
who
didn't
charge
you.
Oh, the grocery store, yes.
Well, I think that's very interesting. And maybe, well, in any case, that was an interesting phenomenon. And I immediately thought, well, that was Josh's benefit, karmic benefit for being so nice to me. Because he's so nice, he got me. This is like, we're up to like, you've gotten me a total of 24 roses at this point. Because the first set of 12 roses was 6 yellow, 6 red, which was means like friendship and love, which I loved that. And this time it was just the red ones.
Right.
I'm taking that to be, first of all, just awesome, and then, because I know we're still friends.
What about...
But you love me lots.
I do. How about this? What about flowers from my mother's yard that she gives permission to take?
Well, that's not stealing.
What about if I take them from my mother's yard without asking her?
Then don't do it.
And don't give those to you.
You can give them to your mom. She'll be annoyed, too. She'll be... Your mom will go, "Why, Josh, why are you doing that?"
What if I start asking my neighbors if I can pick a flower? Like, I'll see them out in the yard tending and say, "You have such a beautiful flower collection."
Well, what do you think I would say about that? Based on just rational interpretation of my whole ethic about it. What would I think?
Why am I hesitating? I think you'd be okay with it.
Of course.
Yes. You know what? Here we go. your positive influence on me has going to is going to change my flower stealing into something that is a community interaction with a neighbor, eliminating the theft, creating the sense of shared beauty. Look at what we've accomplished together.
Yay! Well, yeah, no, I just...
And it saves me money on flowers, too.
Is this all just a cost-cutting measure, this whole thing? But just think about it. Because you did such a good thing karmically of buying me roses, yeah. The universe gave you, like, a treat.
The free groceries, yeah. On the side?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I have doubts about this universe reciprocating karmically.
I know. Yeah. I would, too, if I hadn't experienced it so much.
Yeah. Tell me more about that karmic reciprocation. I mean, this is something that a lot of people have experienced, this feeling of being compensated for good behavior in the absence of, like, not being arrested by the police.
Oh, well, I have a different take on that. Sometimes a bad thing is the best thing that your karma can do. I'll tell that story in a second. Remind me if I forget, because, okay. You know, I have attention span of a squirrel on crack. But but one thing I want to level set about on that is that it's not like there's this karma god outside of us that is, like, meting out rewards and punishments. Although it is just, it's just cause and effect. It's just the concept of karma. There's a lot of different aspects of it, but on the most rudimentary level, it's just the stuff that you, what you put out there energetically with your thoughts, words, and actions, whether they are unconscious or conscious, comes back. It's because of because nature is circular, and if, you know, if you, the premise that I operate within, that everything is connected, mm-hmm. You can't do anything outside of yourself that isn't also inside of yourself.
Is the responsiveness to the unconscious, like, good deed from the universe equivalent as the response from the universe as an intentional good deed?
Well, I would say that there is something about intention, uh-huh. That significantly impacts the potency. Uh-huh. And I think, again, that ties with consciousness. So if you have, yeah. A conscious intention, meaning, uh-huh. You have actively intended,
yeah.
Consciousness is empowered by that, mm-hmm. Is focused, is like, mm-hmm. You know, it becomes more activated in a particular direction. So that is why people who are more in tune or more aligned with intentional cause and effect, mm-hmm. In one way or another tend to get their karma back a lot quicker.
Can I use an analogy to check in on something?
Yeah.
A ball. Say I have a bouncy ball and I'm walking down the street and I want to have it just bounce. So I drop the ball and it bounces. I'm not doing anything intentional with it aside from just letting the ball go. In fact, let's even say that the ball is attached to, like, a little string on the side of my shirt and I'm walking around. That's how I carry the ball, and it falls off and bounces. So the bounce is sort of the karmic reaction of the universe, like the law of gravity in a bouncing ball.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I got a bounce out of it. Now let's, mm-hmm. Say that instead I pick up the ball, I pull it off my little string, and I'm holding it, and I want to bounce the ball, and I throw it on the ground and watch the bounce. Is that a decent analogy?
I love that analogy.
That's like the intention.
Dude, I like that analogy so much,
yeah.
That I think I invented it.
Wow, that's a compliment, folks out there in,
yeah.
Podcast
land. But I didn't invent it. But I invented a boyfriend who could invent it.
I'm feeling restless. I don't know why.
I love it.
Have you noticed that I've been sitting down and getting up? And...
Of course I'm noticing it.
Yeah, you haven't commented on it, though.
Well, I was about to, but we got on to other things. Yeah, what I was going to say about it, Joshy and I have been talking about how...
Joshy, look at me. I got a... What's that word? A a fondness nomenclature?
A pet name.
Pet name. There we go. Fondness nomenclature.
Yeah. Fondness nomenclature. That's what all the kids are saying, calling it. What's your FN, my dude? What's your fondless? I can't even say it. Okay, but
Joshy something.
Joshy. What about Joshy? See, don't be squirrel. Okay, what were we talking about? Oh, stand up, sit down, fight. Okay.
Yeah.
Josh has been moving around a lot in the context of this podcast while we're doing this. And I am experiencing it as evidence, even more evidence, that we need to do a YouTube deal. Because both you and I are vivid in our hand and body expression.
We are. Yes, we are. Oh, you know what I was doing, folks? I was about to get up, reach for my phone, and start recording a little bit of video and then putting it in a link to the show notes to a YouTube thing. But then I realized, nah, set and setting not right.
Oh, no, because my bedroom right now is like there's a lot of laundry happening in here, a lot of folding that has not yet occurred, a lot of human activity, evidence of many different arts and crafts. But I'm alive.
Me too. This is humanity. We are in the zone. We're in a bedroom right now. Did you say that just now?
Yeah. I might have. But it also, this room, which has a bedroom, you know, it's really accommodates a lot because it's also my office.
Cat jungle gym.
Cat freaking awesome cat jungle gym. That cat is like, she's in freaking heaven.
Where is the cat?
She doesn't like the podcast.
Oh.
But, and it's also my crafting accumulate. That's not my cat.
Crafting?
I was like, when I heard that sound, I was like, do we have another cat? Because that's not my cat's meow. And then I realized it was my adorable boyfriend's.
Yes. Crafting.
I have a lot of crafting things and art things because I do a lot of art. Josh likes the art chicks.
Yes, he does. I'm making sounds of me rummaging through crafts.
Way to be. Like, that's some audio. That's like some audio backup stuff. Okay, that's the sound of a
cat jungle
of a transitional bed scenario, I think is what that is. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so, all right.
Yes.
So, okay, but back to what I was going to say about the other aspect of cause and effect. I'm going to tell an anecdote about a friend of mine, and I hope that if she ever hears this, she will not be offended. Okay, I'm going to change it. No, I don't even know this person. I'm making up this person whole cloth. This is just an imaginary scenario. Okay.
This isn't Jenny, right?
Jenny. No. Oh, wait. No. Yes, it is. It is. It's some random person named Jenny. Her name is Jenny, and she's an old friend of mine from my Alaskan fishing days.
Jenny. Jenny. There is no Jenny.
There's no Jenny. Okay. Anyway, a friend of mine who was a person who practiced the same form of Buddhism that I have a lot of experience practicing, and at one point, her daughter became friends with someone who was this, and as a teenager, this was teenage misbehavior kind of a thing. And my friend's daughter had a friend who was a chronic shoplifter, this young teenage girl that was the friend of my daughter's friend. The friend of my daughter, my friend's daughter, the friend of my friend's daughter.
I love this story. I've heard this story, and I do like it.
Okay. So, they got caught shoplifting. My friend's daughter and the daughter's friend did get caught shoplifting. And this was the very first time my friend's daughter had ever shoplifted.
Jenny
from my Alaskan fishing days. Anyway, my friend was commiserating about this situation because of the fact that her daughter, my friend's daughter, my friend who was an active practitioner of Buddhist practice, got the her daughter got the book thrown at her. Basically had to do all of this community service, and it was like all of this stuff. I mean, it was like after this one event of shoplifting, and the daughter's friend, the person who was a chronic repeat offender of shoplifting, got off scot-free. And my friend was saying, how can that be? How could that have happened? And I said, because your daughter has better karma. This other girl, young woman, is going to keep making cause after cause after cause, and those chickens are going to come home to roost eventually. Your daughter, who has good karma, is quickly getting all the consequences available to her so that she can say, aha, I do not want to do that anymore. And so sometimes when we have good karma, our consequences appear more severe, mm-hmm. almost as a way of saying, hey, get back on track. Don't keep, doing that thing that is definitely going to whoop your butt later. Another example of a similar thing, another young woman that I know that I've heard this story about also had very newly begun practicing Buddhism, the kind of Buddhism that I have familiarity with. And this young woman, before she began practicing Buddhism, was herself a chronic kleptomaniac and truly a klepto, in the sense that she wasn't stealing. It wasn't like a Les Miserables scenario where she was trying to feed her family. She just liked to steal stuff. And so she had just barely begun practicing. And she had always just gotten away with all of this klepto behavior. And this one day, after she had begun practicing Buddhism, she, for no reason whatsoever, stole a jar of mayonnaise. She basically snuck a jar of mayonnaise into her other grocery bags. So she bought groceries, but just stuck a jar of mayonnaise into the bag. And she went home, walked into her apartment, and her entire apartment had been emptied out. Someone, while she had been at the grocery store, had come in and stolen everything from her apartment. And she's immediately had the insight, this is my karma for being a person who steals all the time. And from that moment forward, she chose not to steal. So karma isn't a punishment or a reward. It's more of like feedback in an enactivist sense. It is feedback that what the way you interact is looking back, the way you're looking at and interacting with the world is looking at and interacting with you in a like manner.
I like this story especially because it introduces an interaction between what you're saying is the environment and a person's actions. This is one of those tie-ins to how people get caught up in a separation, caught up into the separation of the what's happening in the world and what's happening in their mind or their actions. Being aware of consequences as a way of feeling part of the world. I think in some ways the sense of karma gives people a feeling of belonging that is helpful. Even though there's that misconception of karmic punishment or rewards just being out there as almost a variety of conditioning, like operant conditioning, reward, punishment. I don't know where I'm going with this. There's something here, though, that I like that fits with you. I mean, you threw the word enactivist out there. there's an extension of our consciousness from our bodies out into the world. And I know we've had discussions, too, of consciousness not necessarily being localized in a person's body. And maybe even we thought of it as a little bit of like radio transmitters. You know, we've used ideas
like this. Well, that we are not the transmitter, we're the receiver.
Receiver, there we go.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, people listen, you know, and I do. And there's a lot in quantum gravity physics and different things like that that are supporting these ideas. I'll tell you where I first began to think differently about consciousness, or where it first, not where I first began thinking differently, but where these ideas began to first gel for me, interestingly enough, was in reading his Dark Materials trilogy.
Philip Pullman?
That is correct.
Did I get that right? This might be one of the first times in our podcast we've referenced a book.
We can do that all you want, sir.
Reference books?
Well, I don't want to have to do reference books. That's boring. Reference. Except for the OED. Uh-huh. I would love, you know what I want? I want an Oxford English Dictionary on a podium, like a big giant one on a podium where you go and you look up words. But it seems absurd now, because it's like I gave you that awesome hourglass, which is the most analog thing in the world, especially in a time when we can check the time on our phones constantly. But and a big OED on a podium. Well, you know, I told you I have a sort of erotic reaction to libraries. And so,
how do you feel about globes?
They're pretty hot too.
What I was wondering, because I see globes and big OEDs as being in the same fetish box.
Yeah, well, let's not say fetish. That makes it sound even more sordid. It probably is, but let's not say that. I'm feeling shy. I'm feeling shy about letting in on my sapiosexuality, as it were. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap up this particular segment and start a new one before we run out, and we'll be back momentarily. Welcome back, Josh.
I feel very welcome.
Yay! Welcome back. Okay. So we were talking about the, I used the term sapiosexual, which you taught me that word.
Sapio. You know, I learned it from dating apps.
You did?
Yeah.
You learned that. What else? Oh, that's cool. So, okay. So for those of you that aren't Googling it yet, it means... What does sapiosexual? That's how the British would say it. Sapiosexual. Because I love what I was just mentioning to Josh, that the thing about Britishness is when they say sexual, it just makes it sound dirty.
Sapiosexuality. You know, I bet if you went online and looked it up, or you went to the OED where you wouldn't find it. maybe you will. Maybe this is
something. In the fancy OED, big one. Anyway, go on. Are you worried you're going to give the wrong definition now yourself as not knowing this word?
I think it just means you're attracted to intelligent people.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. And that's you. That was a generic you, not a Tracy you.
But I knew that. I knew that, but yes. I went ahead and I improved it.
You did. Yes. Yes, and she is. Yes, and it's all about everybody. So I think that's just it. Attracted to intelligent people. So it's just a way of characterizing what turns a person on, or what they look for in a person. You know, it's part of the pantheon of, there's something in our modern times where spectrums have been embraced in lieu of categorization.
Mm-hmm.
Autism spectrums, gender spectrums, sexuality spectrums. However, I think sapiosexuality, pansexuality, it's less, it is somewhat categorical, but it still allows for sort of a spectral experience. Remember the other day how I used the word refraction?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was talking about consciousness and how when we're conscious of something, it will bend as if reality is coming through, as if it were light, into our awareness. And in the process of becoming aware of an experience, it gets bent and then output as segregated.
You really lean into the whole thing about it being bent. Is there something about that piece of it that is significant to you? Because when we've talked about it, you've often said it gets bent. Uh-huh. So is it something about talking about that, for instance, in a light spectrum going through a prism? Is a good, that's what I keep imagining.
Well, bent, I think for me, it means it's separated and moved. I mean, in the context of light, it gets separated. You have a unity that comes through the idea of a spectrum that's present in light, and at the same time, within a rainbow, we end up having some segregation with a sense of continuity during the transition points. Anyway, I use bent because it adds an element of physicality that comes through perception, embodied consciousness, and so that physicality is what takes something kind of maybe ephemeral like light, and you act on it, and you kind of manipulate it through being aware of it. So I like the word bent because it takes something abstract and makes it feel more hands-on.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it has the sense of something being, something was enacted upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Consciousness, cognition, going together with the environment.
Okay, so back to, so we don't get too off track, because I like where you're headed with that. So the spectrums with regard to, you know, autism spectrum, or gender spectrum, mm-hmm. orientation spectrum, all those different kinds of spectrums.
Spectra.
I like to say
Spectra.
Oh, and this is what's cool for you lucky SOB. I love being corrected like that about stuff like saying it the right way.
Yeah.
And a shout out to Logan Worthley, who told me to stop saying Samhain. Because Samhain, you know, that holiday, Samhain, it looks like it should be Samhain. And I said Samhain, and she goes, Samhain. And then I pretended for like about 3 months that it was a crushing blow. And it had really only been like a 30% crushing blow. But anyway, okay, Spectra. Oh my gosh, that's my rapper name, DJ Spectra.
DJ Spectra, getting bent.
Okay. So what do you think about that? Because, okay, what you're talking about, what I'm hearing, is there's a sense of there is, in that moving through, like all of the data, let's call the light in a, that before it goes through the prism, mm-hmm. all of the data of all of those colors of the rainbow exists within that field of light.
Mm-hmm.
And it is because of the filter that it goes through that we see that things bifurcated.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a little bit of a where you were kind of headed when you talked about we're on the journey toward talking about gender spectrum and autism spectrum, etc.?
Yeah, how we take things that are on a continuum and we end up creating categories. In the categories, we have terms for the categories, like sapiosexual, that we use to, you know, orient ourselves to each other.
It doesn't really fully define me or anyone.
Yeah.
But I liked it because mm-hmm. you said that term, and I'm like, oh, I don't know what that is. And I love that about you, that you know a lot of words I don't know, because some people think I know a lot of words. And you know even more words. I have to ask you, what does that mean? A lot. And I really like that.
She likes that.
Sapiosexual. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you better get you an OED and start practicing up, because I'm going to learn all the words you know, and then you're not going to be able to leverage that on me anymore. Got to stay ahead of the game. So at this point, if we were in a YouTube video, the fact that you are thinking a lot right now and doing some stretching and have like a super thinky look in your head would be a lot more easy to register. But since we are audio only in this moment, you'll have to perhaps speak aloud all the little wheels that are turning in your head that I can see.
You know, I made a learning tool the other day for Tango, and it was a set of audio prompts to do different moves. One of the moves in the audio prompts was long pause. So, you know, in a lot of podcasts, a long pause, any pause for that matter, it's uncommon, you know. So that visual aspect of things, it's like when you see something, it's almost as if silence is more tolerable when you can see it, you know. And I think intuitively you knew that, as you know, making the suggestion during that moment where I had the thinky face and you gave our listeners the additional, you know, visual fill in. Anyway, what was funny about me creating this learning tool, putting it up on YouTube with one of the moves for tango practice, someone put a comment: after the long pause, can you add a short pause? So I was thinking, what is the continuum of silence? You know, like how long are silences? Because they're measured by the what is starting and stopping on either side.
Well, it and I think in a visual context and even in an audio context, to let to some degree, a silence. Well, it's like, you know, the expression a pregnant pause, right? It has, if there's this sense that there is the accumulation or the building of tension, that, so like if you think about it in the context of tango, it in the that pause, there is a buildup of energy that will then be, it builds tension and expectation and suspense, and then in the next move, that move contains the energy of all that has built up during that pause. And so it increases the energy of the thing that happens afterwards. Now, if the pause goes on too long, the dance is over and you cannot pick it up. Like you can't wait 5 minutes and then be in the same dance. You would be in a new dance if you got back, if you began dancing again. Because, so I think there's a sense of also the attention span of both the viewer or the listener and the sort of social expectation of how long a pause can be. Like, and that's going to be contextual too, because like if you're sitting in a sharing circle and you've got a talking stick or something, people have a, if you've got the talking stick, you can sit there and not say anything for 20 minutes and people are just like, okay, that dude's got the talking stick. But I would say in the general talking, even in a talking stick scenario, 20 minutes, somebody'd be like, oh,
But tell me this, though, going back to karma, what determines how long, you know, between a result? I mean, you were saying that like a good karma thing, there's like a short amount of time. Like if someone has good karma, they do something and right away something happens. So there's degrees of delay that are introduced in the process of consequences of our actions. And help me understand, why is there a delay? It's just going back because
I think it, my theory, and I don't know why.
Yeah,
I
I'm
mean, I don't
usually
100% know why, but I have a theory. And the theory is based again on intentionality, right? It's like there's oomph. There's oomph in intentionality. And that's why when people become, like, for instance, when a person becomes aware of something like synchronicity, the synchronicity will amp up. So consciousness, you can call it, it's not just about intention, like I want yada, yada, yada to happen. It is the where you put your attention. It is what you are looking at, what you are available to become aware of. So that's, it creates this kind of like feedback loop that, that is faster and faster and faster, where because you have expectation and attention, but it isn't just, oh, well, you were looking for it, so it happens, because sometimes the things that happen are very, so unlikely. And that's where you get into where you get synchronicity. So maybe for our purposes and for purposes in general, it would be useful to change, to not call it good karma and bad karma. It's not about good or bad.
Cause and effect.
It's just cause and effect. Yeah. Which it's just like, if you use your analogy of the ball, it isn't better when the ball just falls off of the little hook versus when you throw it. Neither are good, neither are bad. They're just different in the expression of the energy. And the one with more attention, meaning choice and decision making of take the ball off the hook, make the ball go bounce, it bounces higher. You have to, you know.
All right. So I want to introduce something here that's important for me. So a lot of these discussions of karma seem to be relating to an individual's experience. Is there such a thing as shared karma?
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah.
Of course. So you could say all of it is, in a sense.
Yeah. So if two people are in a relationship.
Like who?
You and me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I knew you meant us.
Yeah. Can we make a cause together?
Oh, of course. We already have. We are in the result of a cause at this moment. We've at some point made the causes to be with each other, and now we are. So we are currently in effect, and we are simultaneously making causes. So we are in effect right now, you might say. In that somewhere along the line, we each made the causes through intention to be with someone like us. And now we are, and it's pretty neato.
Very neato. Very neato.
And so with that in mind, what do you... So, and I think, and as it would be individually or jointly, in this case, the more conscious one makes those causes, the more intentional, the bigger, the more impactful the cause. But we are making unconscious causes all the time. I think you and I, being both pretty dang conscious people, dare say, seems like to me, we're making lots of very intentional causes all along about honesty and communication, things like that.
Yeah, the reason I bring that up has to do with, how do I put this? Like the cause and effect that come from separate intentions interacting. Things like, if I'm going to go back to the ball analogy, and this is really me reaching around for some ideas, like if we're walking next to each other and I've got the ball hooky thing going along, and you're kind of watching me because you think, you know, my butt is cute or something like that.
More explicit content, Josh. Dang.
And you notice the ball coming loose, and right before it hits the ground, you grab it and you catch it. So what might have been like my individual, you know, unintentional karma of the ball falling, you interacted with it. And again, we'll go to the other thing where, you know, I'm throwing the ball, and instead of it hitting ground, because you're with me, you catch it. And so I'm looking at this joint karmic thing that happens when intentions and unintentional intentions interact with each other. I'm really trying to calibrate the timing of karmic results and how the timing is altered through intentional and unintentional interactions between people with individual kind of karmic paths and then blended ones. And this
can I jump in on this a little bit?
Yeah.
Because this is something I believe to be true, and which is that one intentional consciousness is more powerful than 100 unintentional. Mm-hmm. So like there's like collectively we have collective karma, like for instance who we get for a president, what kind of government we live in, all of those things are our collective karma. That's that is our collective karma, and it is sort of, and you can see how, so like 100 people just let's take it to like something like voting. 101 people might have an opinion, but only if only one of them votes, then only one of them impacts who the leader is. But who the leader is everybody's karma. And so it is the karma of the 100 people who didn't vote that they have a president who they may or may not want. But they did not choose, but they didn't, were not active in choosing. Now, one person who votes for Bob the Butcher, Bob the Butcher is not going to be president. Because that's just one guy. I wrote in Bob the Butcher. I can't believe he didn't win. So when we're talking about collective karma, there is a sense of some that there is there's a sum. But if nobody in the whole country voted, and the one write-in guy said Bob the Butcher, it'd be like, I guess it was Bob the Butcher the president now? I guess so, right? So there's a sense of, but of course, that's an absurd demonstration. But do you see does it help the concept? Yeah.
It does. It's really quite brilliant, you know?
Thank you.
It's a good one.
Thank you. That one's mine.
That one's yours.
What was that one that I said I wanted to steal that was yours? That was cool. I said that one's mine.
I think it's just the ball.
That was so good.
I know, but I don't know. Your collective karma description that incorporates both collective consciousness and the democratic process. I mean, kudos. That's a civic effort and a good analogy.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I'm very proud of my analogies, even though I feel like they are downloaded from the cosmos. Because I get these pictures in my head. The way I get my analogies, I work very strongly in analogies and metaphors. But it's like I get these little downloads of pictures in my head, and then I just sort of describe the pictures. It's almost, truthfully, I feel like my metaphors and analogies are kind of downloaded.
Downloaded. You know, I really want one of our future episodes to address the technological existence and the metaphors that have been made available through technology. The metaphors that help us understand humanity better through you can see where I'm going here.
I do. Yeah. Well, but and someone could say, oh well, that's a misuse of it. But no, who created the technology? Mm-hmm. The collective did. Mm-hmm. So the collective is creating technology, and then technology becomes an analogy for humanity. So that's a nice little feedback loop.
Especially this will allow us to introduce some of the issues with our climate crisis, where a collective use of technology has created an existential threat, you know.
But it also, there may be inherent in technology also perhaps something of the solution to the threat, because that was good. That sort of, it's basically industrial revolution, technology that has created the threat. And it's information age technology, which brings it to everyone's awareness much more rapidly, so that there's more potential for enough people to get to a tipping point of saying, ack, we need to do something about it. You know, that may or may not happen. That is yet to be discovered. But in a sense, it's like the information age isn't what created the crisis, but the information age. But we still have all of the, I mean, I, you know, it's like, I suppose there was, the Bronze Age was probably still dinking around for a while during the Agricultural Revolution. Much less impact on both of the, well, Agricultural Revolution had some downsides too, of course. But we're, but we still have the, we still have the vestiges of the Agricultural Revolution, but it's been weirdly industrialized.
Yeah. It has.
I think the Industrial Revolution, bless its heart, but it was not one of our best ones in some ways. But in other ways, it it was the Industrial Revolution. One of the things that it did create, it created the possibility of democratization in a way that we did not have before. It was a messy, nasty, dirty, sooty way to bring about democratization, but I don't believe, but it was the best way we could have at the time.
You have a unique, well, it's not unique, it's something that I'm not in touch with as much, and that has to do with a reverence for democracy, you know. Something that in terms of political awareness that is really essential, I think, for civic harmony, is to have some degree of reverence for the democratic process.
Well, I think we've seen the limits of it, because when it, when democracy becomes populism, we can see what happens with it. But I think if people understood civics better, but for whatever reason people don't, I think we should spend more time teaching civics. But then that's a cluster waiting to happen too, because who's, depending on who's teaching the civics, we could teach the wrong, we could teach it wrong in a sense. But yeah, I do not think democracy is perfect, but I really think it's as close to as good as we can get, but enlightened democracy, meaning a sense, I like systems that respect the sovereignty of the individual, whether that's religious or spiritual traditions or philosophies or companies. That is my preference. I prefer things that honor the sovereignty of the individual. What, and yet recognize that the individual is an illusion. Therefore, the idea of enlightened self-interest, it benefits me if the world has more happiness and less suffering. And it benefits me because I'm connected to everyone, and that we are all inextricably connected. So it isn't a selfish thing. It's, I like that term, enlightened self-interest. It's like recognizing that because my happiness is inextricable, it cannot be disentangled from the happiness of the people and the planet in with which I, within which I reside.
Do you think that emptiness can feel emotions?
Emptiness?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's such a very Zen question. My, I can barely hear my hand clapping right now.
yeah.
That's super Zen. That's like so Zen. I don't know, sir, but I think that would be where I'm going to, where, this segment is wrapping up, but I am not even sure how to answer that question, because I'm not sure I understand it. So in our next segment, I would really like to hear you expand mm-hmm. on that question. And I would like to know what you mean, because that mm-hmm. very probably could explode my brain.
Yeah. Disembodied happiness.
Oh, yeah. I totally believe in that. And I get where you're going. I wouldn't have called it emptiness, because I don't really think emptiness is, that's a whole nother thing. But mm-hmm. disembodied happiness or disembodied compassion, mm-hmm. yeah, babe, I can riff on that. Mm-hmm. So we'll come back for some of that. And just keep being so awesome, Josh.
I will.
Hi there. I am wanting to let listeners know about a new podcast called Just Deep Enough with Josh and Tracy. I've been doing Josh and Tracy episodes here on Spiritual Not Religious, but we've decided our content is a little bit different than what we're doing in Spiritual Not Religious. So if you listened to a few of the Josh and Tracy episodes and want to hear more of that, go to Just Deep Enough. It is available on all of the same platforms, Spotify and Apple and all of the things. So please go check it out. It has, our first two episodes are about contemplating whether or not ghosts exist, and if they do, how. And then our next episode is about contemplating the concept of immortality. So Josh and I are basically having our unique way of discussing the unexplainable and undefendable and unprovable. And it's pretty fun. So go over there and check that one out. And I will put a link to it here in the podcast notes. I hope I can figure out how to do that. Yeah, I probably can. All right. And hope to see you over there and over here. Okay, bye-bye.